When history is presented factually and honestly, it can provide important lessons and much better understanding. When it's corrupted for a specific purpose, it can recruit people to follow lies to often deadly conclusions. In the days before Russia invaded Ukraine, most people were looking at how over 100,000 Russian troops were stationed at the border as a warning of what was about to happen. There was a tell by Putin, though, long before that, about what his intentions were. It was an article written by Putin where he brought history of the region into his narrative. With us now to discuss the facts versus Putin's treatment of history is Associate Professor of History at the University of New Haven, Professor Bradley Woodworth. How are you today, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And learn more about the educational opportunities, University of New Haven. Their website is newhaven.edu, and we've added that link over at our homepage as well. Now, for you listening, you have to, first of all, as we go into this discussion with the professor, you have to look at this article one of two ways. Either Putin actually did write it, it's rather lengthy, more like a manifesto, or you have to assume that it was written by others based on Putin's instructions, reviewed, and then finally approved by Putin. So having said that, it's dated July 12th, 2021, and Putin pretty much cuts to the chase as fast as he possibly can with the title in the first line on the historical unity of Russians and Ukrainians, where he starts with, during the recent direct line, when I was asked about Russian-Ukrainian relations, I said that Russians and Ukrainians were one people, a single whole. And as he goes into the beginning of the article, he references ancient Rus and how Kyiv was pretty much the capital. Sounds like, Professor, he's trying to tie, create as many ties of Russia to Ukraine in the past to build what he wants to have for the present.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wouldn't take any blame off of Putin for the actions. I mean, that's really what's going on now, is we have ideas, at least according to the Russian state, and according to Putin, being used to murder human beings, right? That's the main fact. At least I think that's the thing that we really have to hold in mind. That said, these ideas about a Eastern Slavic state under the direction of Moscow don't originate with Putin. Those ideas go back at least to the 18th century. So again, that's not to take any blame away from Putin, but he's not the originator of this idea. You have to remember that the Russian Empire has existed for centuries, and particularly in the 18th century under Peter the Great and then his later successor, Catherine the Great, that state expanded vastly to all the way from the Baltic region to the Black Sea. So that vision of a state under Moscow's rule doesn't begin with Putin.
And you can also make the same argument, too. If what Putin said is true, then the Ottoman, Islamic nation should have a restoration of the Ottoman Empire, which would pretty much give them all of Europe.
Yeah, well, or the Italians would say, look, at one point we controlled most of the southern coast of Europe and also the northern coast of the Mediterranean. So we'd like that back too. Yeah. So one thing I'd like to also raise is, whether or not Putin wrote this, we have to ask, what's motivating him? Is it really indeed his concept of Russian history, this idea that, you know, if we look back to the 18th century and the 19th century, the true identity of all of these peoples in Eastern Europe from the Baltic to the Black Sea are to be under Moscow's sovereignty, rule from Moscow? Is that really what's driving it? You know, I think the case could be made that there are other things that are motivating him without access to either thought processes or to internal documents exchanged between Putin and close aides. You know, we can't really know what's motivating him.
And even, too, I mean, he or whoever writes this, I'm just compelled to qualify this because it's doubtful in my mind, even though he is a self-professed student of Russian history. But there are points where it's analytical and detailed about history, although it's reinterpreting it or trying to fit the proverbial square peg into the round hole. But other points, he's just as simplistic as, well, we used to have one language that made us all one people. It just seems like it's the intellectual variable in this one piece is quite wide.
So So again, this idea doesn't start with Putin. The founder, I've got the first volume of his history right here, the founder of modern Russian history, Nikolai Karamzin, wrote in the early 19th century under the direction of Emperor Alexander I, the history of the Russian Empire, or the state of Russia. And right in the first page, he says, you know, if you go back to Kiev, you go back to those early territories in Ukraine, and this is where the state of Russia originates. So, again, that's not to say that Karamzin or any of the other 19th century historians that hold on to that, what historians call the state school, that the expected and natural development of the history of these lands was to create a strong state. That's not to say that they created Putin. But Putin is using, right, he's using as an excuse, as a justification for the murderous policies that he's carrying out, ideas that had existed in previous centuries.
Is Putin reaching back for this, or is this how Russian history is taught today in Russian schools?
It's not just in Russian schools; it's in schools all over the world.
That's
again,
true.
The power, the influence of Moscow as the center of power throughout this empire is influenced books and languages all over the world. Ukraine has become an independent state, essentially for the first time after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. So this is the idea of Ukrainianness as a culture and as a language goes back at least to the 19th century. But the concept of a modern Ukrainian state is a new one, and it's one that had not existed in this narrative of the Russian Empire and the Soviet Union. And that's so in that sense, this is a new idea, and Putin wants to just cast it aside. My own view is that this war is representing an immense turning point in all of the history of the lands of the former Russian Empire, in all of Eastern Europe, probably a larger turning point even in the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Because indeed, Moscow had been in control over all of these lands for 300 years, well, depending on which part of the empire you're looking at. And that's not going to happen in the 21st century, regardless of how much more murdering there is. The world won't tolerate. Historians are trying not to predict the future. I would hope that we wouldn't tolerate a nuclear armed state, right, that is not abiding to commonly accepted Western ideas about the rule of law, right, and that the people actually get to choose their leaders. Putin wants to, in a sense, go back to that Russian Empire. He himself said that the greatest catastrophe in Russian history was the Russian Revolution, because then it put into motion a set of ideas that were to lie at the heart of the coherency of the state, these ideas about a new economic system. Lenin himself had said that parts of the Soviet Union, if they so choose, could leave, and of course the Bolsheviks didn't let that happen. But the Soviet Union, conceptually, was a movement away from this longer history of a powerful autocratic state run from Moscow. And so, at least in this document that was published under Putin's name last July, he's appealing to that longer history of power.
Talking to Professor Bradley Woodworth, who is Associate Professor of History at the University of New Haven, and newhaven.edu is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Going off what you said, too, and certainly the reality versus how Putin is taking on and presenting history, there's a difference. In the article, he talks about how multiple times the people of Ukraine wanted to be part of the Russian family. Okay, well, that's so. Why are they fighting so hard against it right now? And he often references in the article, and then, of course, more recently, the Nazification of Ukraine, which factually there was a Nazi presence in Ukraine, which has been long since scrubbed. But if you want to call Ukraine a Nazi state, you'd have to be consistent today, call America a slave-holding state because of the past.
Yeah, it's a good example, right, how you could pick some parts of all countries and all polities, all groups of people have parts of their history that pose different options. It's clear the option that Ukraine has chosen since 1991, and that is to move towards a democratically run, a democratic state where the people get to choose their leaders, where they have an open economic system, and increasingly in the last 15 years have wanted to become part economically of Europe rather than have their face towards Moscow, which again had been the case for since the mid-17th century. The idea of Ukrainians turning their face westward, right, away from Moscow, certainly threatens those that rely on the concept of a Russian empire for their own identity, which includes Putin. So the article on the historical unity of Russians and Ukrainians introduces this idea of Ukraine as an anti-Russia. This is a fascinating concept, right? The idea that there's some sort of Russia that is not Moscow. And looking back at this 19th century view of the Russian Empire as the Russian East Slavic Russian state as starting in Kiev, the idea exists that there could be this, well, indeed is, an Eastern Slavic identity, part of the Russian Empire, that is not in Moscow. So Putin sees that as this incredible threat, and he wants to end it. He wants there not to be another kind of, East Slavic state that people could look to. He wants only Moscow as the center of people's attention.
And ironically, the potential is growing as Russia continues to perpetrating. They're going to have a 800-mile NATO nation possibly on the border with Finland joining NATO. And there are some people who think that the separatist areas in eastern Ukraine might look at what Russia's doing and what is still their country as Ukrainians and say, no, we're not all one Russia. We're all one Ukrainians. And that's how, and he might just be a bigger loser than he's even imagining right now.
The very thing that he purportedly wanted to avoid, right, and that is to have Ukraine go westward, he is creating through this war. The very thing he was afraid of is actually coming about. The case of Finland is an important one. In the 19th century, it was actually part of the Russian Empire. It had a separate status. It wasn't the lands of Finland weren't regular Russian provinces, but it had a it was actually, in terms of the military, part of the Russian Empire. So the Finns, certainly more so than the Swedes, deep down have this fear, right, that if Putin were successful in Ukraine, he just might come back and say, Finland is also part of our historical state run from Moscow, part of the historical Russian Empire, and so we need it back. And he could say that also about the small Baltic states of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, sure, which came to be part of the Russian Empire in the early 18th century under Peter the Great. Putin could say, those two are part of our historical patrimony, and we want them back, and we're going to take them.
He is the Associate Professor of History at the University of New Haven. On the web to learn more about their educational opportunities, it's newhaven.edu. Professor Bradley Woodworth, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.